It's good to be here with you and to share in this time of worship and praise and to give God the glory for what has been bestowed upon us, our very lives, our very beings, to be a part, an active part of God's creation. November 22nd, 1972. I know for some that will be a hard date to remember and reflect upon as to what was going on in your life because you weren't even born yet. But for others of you who are in the room, think back to 1972, November 22nd. Can you remember what you were doing or anything significant that happened in your life? Probably not. And in all honesty, I had to do a Google search to figure out what actually the date was. But I can remember the time and place quite well because it's emblazoned in my memory of an event that happened to me when I was a child. And so y'all can do math. I will let you know that in 1972, I was 9 years old. And so, again, to help you do quick equation, 48. So anyway, at 9 years old, I was in fourth grade. Are you in fourth grade by chance? All right. Well, an important part of my life occurred, or I won't say important, but a very meaningful, significant event occurred in my life on the Wednesday prior to Thanksgiving in 1972. I was a new transfer into a city school system, Sam Houston Elementary School, and I was just there for the first few months, just beginning to make new friends and try to establish some sense of my identity in this new place. And I don't know if, for those of you, again, kind of out of my generation, I'm not quite sure they do it today to our school children as much as it was done to us, but, you know, all kinds of things showed up on the lunch line, like Brussels sprouts and collard greens and all these things that, you know, as a kid you go through and like, what is this that you're putting on my plate? But one of those things that they would always do the day before Thanksgiving, what would be the dessert that they would give you? Pumpkin pie. And how did it come? Well, in those little tins with the little crust and the pie right there. And so that was supposed to have been a really nice treat. But again, for most of us fourth graders, pumpkin pie. Ugh. Love it now. It's amazing after I tell you the story. But, anyway, we're at the end of the school day. The bell has rung. We are on our way to the school buses. And probably from about where I'm standing right here to way on the other side of the street, it was at least that far, if not further, was the distance from the front doors of the schoolhouse to where the buses were lined up. And as I was coming out the door, and we were getting kind of in the lawn, across the little circle drive and crossing into the lawn to get to where the buses were parked at the street, was my new friend, David Ramger, who was being chased by who I knew as the bully, Steve Jacobs. And in Steve Jacobs' hand was one of these pumpkin pies that he had saved his from lunch. And he was, it was quite obvious, trying to get this pie on some part of David's body. And so he had David and was getting reared back to just let him have it. And the only person who had really befriended me, David Ramger, I thought instantly, I've got to do something to help. So instinct kicked in, and with all of my body that I could muster of my strength, I ran running and pushed Steve enough to throw him off balance so that David broke free. It worked! Except it's almost like the matador with the red cape with the bull, because all of a sudden Steve Jacobs' focus and attention turned to me. And now it was a foot race from me to get where I was to my school bus and to stay ahead of Steve Jacobs. Well, I was within feet of the bus when all of a sudden I was kind of these like little birds flying around your head, and all of a sudden I'm looking up at the sky. what happened. In that split second, Steve had grabbed the back of my coat jacket, my hood, and just yanked me as hard as he could. And with my forward momentum and his pulling, those of you who have had physics, and even if you're not, you kind of figure this one out, but the yank from the back of my shoulders pulled me off balance, and I went flying my feet out from under me. And that's why I was on the ground looking at blue sky. And the next thing I remember is pumpkin pie being smushed into my face. Well, as all of this shock of what had just occurred, I was kind of just really dazed, and all of a sudden all the flood of emotion, because now what do you do when you've got pumpkin pie smeared all over your face, and where do you go? What do you do? And I was left laying there on the ground, and a school bus, and like every child's face, it seems like, was pressed to the window to look at what was going on. And of course, being the last one on the bus, it was like walking the aisle of shame, because all the front seats were taken. I had to go to the very back of the bus, and all the giggles and laughter and the tears that just started flowing down my face, and that long ride, I was almost the last stop home. So I had to endure that entire ride of about 45 minutes. And I remember I took my coat off, and the pumpkin pie was just like everywhere, and it was in my hair. And when I got home, I found it in my ears and in one of my nostrils. And it was a life-changing moment. I mean, it was just one of those things that I will never forget. And the shame, the embarrassment grew to anger and resentment. And I remember that next day at the Thanksgiving table, my brother, who was 4 years older and was just started high school, we started talking about that event and concocting a plan that on that next night, Friday night, we would look for Steve Jacobs at the football game, and my brother was going to beat him up. And I was so excited because, all right, my brother was going to pay him back. He was going to pay him back. And that thought, although that Friday night came and went and we couldn't find Steve, but those images of all those things that I could do to Steve Jacobs kept going through my mind, literally fantasies of how I would get even with Steve. Hold that story. Today our scripture is from Romans, the 12th chapter. This is Paul's letter to the Romans, to the church in Rome, and setting forth, we've kind of switched here. Let me give a little context of what I'm about to read. All before this, Paul has been setting out somewhat of his theology, our shared doctrinal beliefs of what it means to be a Christian, a follower of Christ. And now this 12th chapter flips things more toward the application, the practice. Okay, previously, these are the things that are important to us that are foundational. But now, where's the life application? What are we supposed to do? So here's the start of this, and this exhortation that Paul shares. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you. Just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we who are many form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. Now, when I was growing up, a lot of childhood stories being shared with you today. And I've kind of reflected back. I'm not sure it's even similar in the world that we live in today, but when I was growing up, it was real popular for kids, especially boys, to play cowboys and Indians. I don't see that much today, and I guess Xbox and Wii and all those other things have kind of replaced the acting out of our role models that we would see in movies or TV shows like Gunsmoke and those good old westerns. But I remember having six shooters and, you know, the holster belt and a vest and my cowboy cap, and my buddies and I would just spend hours and hours shooting at one another, I think in a healthy way. But it was living out what we romanticized of the West, the old Wild West. And I remember on one of the trips my family took as we traveled around, that one of the places we stopped, you could get a poster made, a wanted poster made, and have your picture taken while you're all dressed up in your cowboy gear, and put the reward there, dead or alive, and your face is there. And that hung in my room for years. And my son Will and I just made a trip out west. I had a meeting with other Baptist college presidents and out in Texas, and we kind of took a sideshow after that for a few days and made our own western adventure. Traveled all the way out to the Grand Canyon, and along the way I kept looking and didn't see this kind of thing anymore. So again, it may just be something of the past. But for those of you who have seen westerns, hopefully you remember seeing those posters, wanted, dead or alive. Well, I guess in some ways, you know, Paul might have, if that had been in vogue in his day, might have said, you know, are you dead or are you alive? What are you? Are you a living sacrifice or are you a dead sacrifice? Well, as we look at this first verse that starts out this 12th chapter, Paul is, again, giving us an exhortation. He is urging us to make our lives a living sacrifice. Now, we have to put it in context of his day, of what certainly had been a part of the Jewish Hebrew faith, that their worship to God included sacrifices. But these sacrifices that they would bring were of animals or perhaps their fruit, things that were certainly important to the people of that day. It was important to their livelihood, the fruit from the fields, and vegetables, and the meat from the animals, and all their byproducts provided life to them during that age, much like it provides life to us today. But yet, that was the ritual to kill the animal, and the blood that gives life to all of us, the blood that would give life to that animal, would be offered at the altar as a sacrifice to God. But we know, Christians, where we are on this side of that divide, that with Christ, those of us who follow Christ, we know that Christ was our sacrifice. And from that point on, this ritual of bringing some kind of a sacrifice to God was not any longer the sense of this animal or the blood of that animal that would become the sacrifice, but through the living of our lives, how we go about living each day becomes our sacrifice to God. I don't know how many of you have seen the movie. I think it's been out at least part of this year, if not a whole year. But Soul Surfer, anybody seen that movie yet? About Bethany Hamilton. She was a surfer, and still is, actually. But when she was 13 years old, this is about 8 years ago, I don't want to ruin the movie, but it's based on her story. So if you read the newspaper, you kind of know how the movie's going to turn out. But she was out surfing on the northern shore of Kauai in Hawaii, and was quite good as a 13-year-old, was already winning a lot of national and world championships. And she was out with some friends, and while waiting on a wave, there was a shark, bull shark, I think, that came and took her arm almost completely, all the way up to the shoulder. And if it had not been for her friends who very quickly got her to shore, made a tourniquet out of one of the strings, the ropes that are with the surfboards, to slow the bleeding and to get her to the hospital as quickly as they did, she probably would not have lived. But she did. And the amazing story of this is not just that one tragic incident that occurred in her life, but it's how she went through that experience and what she has continued to do in her life. As I shared earlier, not only was she a good surfer, but she still is today. She has worked to learn how to a new balance on her board. Because those of you who have surfed, I can't even stand on a skateboard without falling over, and it's not even rolling. But you know, on these things that you have to stand on that move, you got to have balance. Well, how do you do that? Well, with your arms. That's why you see the surfers doing this. Well, try imagining keeping your balance with just one arm, plus the fact of trying to get up on the board as the curl of the wave is coming. But she did. She kept working on it, and today is still ranked in the top 25 women surfers in the world. Pretty phenomenal. But more than that, it's her faith that has persevered throughout this whole event in her life that has made her now a living testimony of her living sacrifice, because she is now going around the world sharing her witness through this incident that otherwise people in the world may not have even known who she was. But her amazing story of how she persevered, and it was her faith in God that kept her focused on the more positive aspects of this tragedy rather than what could have been the negative ones of the anger, the hurt, the lament of what life could have been had she not lost her arm. But she has taken the positive, and through that, and through the testimony of this movie, I was reading, because I saw the movie and was quite fascinated by it. And I was amazed as I watched it, because throughout the movie you can see the Christian witness of her family portrayed through all these actors. And as I was reading this article about this movie, apparently there was a lot of conflict in the making of this movie, because the producer, the directors, the people who have all the parts, who decide what the script is going to be and how it's going to be acted out, they were trying to tone down, you know, oh, you can't say scripture in this movie. That doesn't, you know, don't quote a verse, or if you say the words of the verse, don't make any reference that it's from the Bible. But because of Bethany and her firm faith and that of her youth minister, who was an active part of the oversight of the development of this movie, kept saying, no, it's not the true story if you start pulling these things out, because Bethany's faith and that of the faith community of her family and those gathered around her were essential. And so this movie is now being seen literally around the world, which again is just Bethany's story living out, being this living sacrifice. So think about that as we are called through God's mercy, that we are to offer ourselves as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is an act of worship to God. Now, sometimes we get trapped in our heads that we think worship occurs on Sunday mornings or Sunday evenings or Wednesday night prayer meeting, whatever, whenever we're gathered together. Paul's saying, your active worship to God is given to you. That opportunity to worship God is given to you every time you have an opportunity in your life to live your life as God has called you to live it. Every moment that you do something as an outward expression of your faith is a living act of worship. Paul goes on to say, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world. Now, we've heard that before, haven't we? We are to be in this world, but not of this world. So do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world. And I think it's suffice to say, we don't have to go into a lot of detail to understand what this world is like today and some of the values that are being espoused. There certainly aren't Christian values in all times. And we see through what's happening, just you look around and just watch the continued evolution of values being neutralized, those that are important to us as Christians being neutralized in the public setting, in our society. And you watch the programming on our TVs about who can cheat the most, or who can you watch sometimes Survivor, and it's like boy, how twisted do you have to get to be a winner, to come out on top? And so we're seeing it, and on the business side with the collapse just a few years ago of our financial markets, and knowing all the tricks of the trade that were being done to kind of fool others, and how they made their investments, and how loans and mortgages were rolled together and bundled, people knowing, putting out bad stuff, really, really risky things to cheat, to get around the rules, the guidelines that had been already established to prevent things like that from happening. So from ethics in the workplace to just the general morality of our world, I think we understand Paul's message here that we are not to conform to the pattern of this world. But what? What is Paul saying? Okay, we're not supposed to be a part of this, but what is it? We are to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. We're to be transformed by the renewal of our minds. Now, I think everyone could understand and appreciate that what we're trying to do at Bluefield College is very much a part of this transformational process. We talk about it often, that it's not only the transformation of the mind that's important, because knowledge is important. The church would not have created colleges like Bluefield if the church did not understand the importance of a trained, well-educated mind and the impact that it makes in the church and also society. But also, we talk about the transformation of the heart, because it's an all-end for us, that it's everything that we're trying to transform the holistic essence of our beings to give to God as living sacrifices. But to be transformed by the renewal or the renewing of your mind. A young man named Spencer Wood, who's a graduate of Bluefield College, came just a few years ago and spoke at Convocation, our chapel services that we have on Wednesdays. And in that service, he shared with us that through his life, whatever drew him to Bluefield College, and if I recall correctly, it was basketball, that drew him to Bluefield College, a Christian college, but he came to play basketball. Coming from a home in kind of the Jersey Shore, right along the border there with New York, where his family was agnostic. God just was not mentioned at all in his home. And Sundays didn't mean getting up and going to church to be in fellowship with other believers and to worship God corporately with one another. It was a time to read the paper, sleep late, go out on the golf course, go shoot hoop with friends. But he said in his time at Bluefield College that he encountered professors, and interestingly, it was our professors in our biology department, that were challenging him to think about bigger pictures in life and to think about this whole concept of who he was and what was his purpose for existence and what God's plan was for him. Now, he resisted that. This is, again, his testimony that he shared in convocation, that he resisted it, but it challenged him enough, because he didn't really believe in this God thing, that he began reading the Bible and reading others who are the early church fathers to get a better understanding, to bring clarity why his point of view, that there really was not a God, was correct. But he said after he graduated from Bluefield, as this search continued, this quest to find truth, that his mind was transformed to lead him to an understanding of the importance that there is a God and the importance of a relationship with Jesus Christ that led him to become a follower of Christ, which he shared with our campus community, that led him back to his home to lead his brother, his father, his mother to Christ. The transformation that takes place through the renewal of our mind is critically important, Paul reminds us. And then he goes on to share, "For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you." And then he goes into all these various things that are, I would refer to as spiritual gifts. And Paul in other places, in his other letters that he's written to the church, even refers to this similar list as a spiritual gift. This is something that God has given you. Now, what I just read leading into these various spiritual gifts, do not think more of yourself than you do of others. I think that's a way of saying, don't be haughty. don't be a snoot and think of yourself as being better than someone else. And that your role in this body of faith that you have here at your church and this community where you're living out your witness, you play an important role. Every one of you play an important role. But just because your role may be seen or you think it's more important than someone else's, don't get caught in that mindset, but be who you are and enjoy living out your faith in a way that reflects Christ, but being a humble servant of Christ. Now, I know in this time of transition in your church family, there can be this unease. We don't have a pastor. And there can be this sense of, well, how will the church continue to function? Well, I hope by now you figured out we know how to continue to function. God has gifted every one of you with a gift or more than one gift. And as you give of that gift back to this body of believers, this church continues to live. It continues to thrive. It continues to reach out into the community around. And whether you have been called to prophesy, maybe some of you have filled the pulpit, whether you have been called to teach, and I'm assuming some of you will walk out of this room in the next hour and you will be teaching others, whether you have been called to serve, and I hope that you continue to work, whatever the... I think that's Pocahontas that's developing a food pantry. But isn't there something here in the community that y'all are giving back, and whether it's clothes or food or just helping people with their electric bills? I mean, there are numerous ways you continue to serve in this community. And Paul's just helping us remember that we all have a place. We are all part of this body. And if you flip over to 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, Paul talks about it even in other ways more related to the body, where he says, and again, I know this is a very familiar passage, the body is a unit. Through it is made up of many parts, and though all its parts are many, they form one body. So it is with Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, slave or free, and we were all given the one Spirit to drink. Now the body is made up, not made up of just one part of many. It is the foot would say, because I am the hand, I do not belong to the body. It would not, for that reason, cease to be part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body. And on he goes. And so what Paul's saying is we are a body. We're one. And just because you're the ear, you can't say, well, I can't be a part of the body because I'm not the eye. We're not to look at it that way. We're to look at it the other way. We're the ear. We play an important part. We discern. We hear what others are saying. And we're helping in that discerning process because you have the gift to listen to someone's needs. You have the gift to listen to when someone's hurting. So whatever your part of the body, live it out to the glory of God. Through that, you are being a living sacrifice, which is your very act of worship to God. Back a number of years ago, really, I guess the last 4 years are the last few years where I have not been teaching youth Sunday school. But starting back since graduation from college, and yeah, I think it was after college, I began teaching Sunday school with youth and different age groups throughout that span of time, from Tennessee to Kentucky to North Carolina before we moved here to Virginia. And just because of my role and doing some of the things I do at Bluefield College, like being here with you today, kind of prevents my active engagement in that teaching role with youth. And so there's a part of me that laments that. But there's other days that I think, oh, all that youth have going on with them, I'm glad I'm not having to deal with that, other than having to deal with it at home with my own youth. But anyway, I was in Tennessee at the time. So this goes back a number of years. I was actually in law school, or I think actually I'd already graduated from law school. But anyway, I was this young man's Sunday school teacher, and he showed up. It may have called, I can't remember. But anyway, he stopped by my apartment on a Sunday afternoon. And there's this incident that had occurred. And this young man's name's Joel, and this incident had occurred. I was already aware of it. There was another teenager who was kind of involved with youth group, but not a member, but he had kind of been hanging out with youth group and kind of coming out of a troubled home, etc. And there was this rumor going around that there had been some theft of electronic equipment, and it was at one of these big electronic stores there in East Tennessee where I lived. And anyway, there was implication, it was an inside job, which everybody was tracking back. You know, they were kind of looking at this teen who had been hanging out with our youth group that summer. And his friend, best friend, was Joel. And so, you know, how the rumor mills go. You know, did Joel have anything to do with that? You know, word is, maybe he did. And so Joel's at my apartment, and he's wanting to talk. And so what kind of came through that conversation was his not only knowledge and confirmation that his friend took these items from the store, but also that he was a part of what they were going to do with it. And, you know, they were going to enjoy it and use it. But he said since the police had, you know, kind of isolated and focused in on this one teen, the business had already fired him, but the police were just like lasered in on him and thinking he was the culprit. Joel was telling me, and of course he entered all this into kind of an attorney-client privilege, although he wasn't necessarily a paying client, but he was just asking for advice. What do I do? Where do I go? And he came to me seeking legal advice, and we talked a little bit about that. But what they ended up doing, they took the equipment, he set it out to the lake, and they ditched it because they realized it was hot. You know, it was hot stuff, so they just ditched it. And so I was talking to him not only as someone giving legal advice, but my heart really was broken for him as a person, because who he could have been and who I knew the potential he had and what God could do in his life. But we talked for hours that afternoon. I remember we prayed, shed a few tears, and that was kind of it. And so Joel went on his way in life, and I think realized, boy, that was a really stupid move, and I'm not going to do that. So I never heard any more along those lines of his activity. But, I knew he had gone on and worked through high school with Chick-fil-A. And if you know Chick-fil-A, if you work for them, you can get scholarships through college. And so he got scholarships and ended up working for them after he graduated from college. And now is a store operator. So he's done quite well professionally in his life. But it was a few years ago. I was still in North Carolina, so maybe 5-6 years ago. And out of the blue, I got this letter from him. And in that letter, he goes back to recount. He was in a men's group, and they were talking about accountability, and part of one of the steps in that group was to recognize those who had made an impact in your life and thank them. And unbeknownst to me, he went back to that moment in his life that was so significant, that he saw as pivotal in his spiritual pilgrimage, that shifted his world from what he had seen his life and his relationship with Christ to something new, a renewed mind that transformed his life. And again, unbeknownst to me, but it was one of those letters, and I've kept it. And I didn't bring it today because I literally, the last time I tried to read it to a group, I started crying. So, but anyway, in that, he's saying he tracked it back to that day. That afternoon in my apartment, where all of this started shifting in his life. Is it important what you do? I would hold that up to say absolutely yes. And we can do things all the time that we never know how significant the impact is on someone else's life. But if we will offer ourselves as a living sacrifice and let God work through us and through our gifts that we have, I think, whether we know it on this side of eternity or on the other side of eternity, we find out just how significant what our lives have been. That's how important it is. Let me finish the story about Steve Jacobs. Steve and I ended up in high school, he being the quarterback, I being the wide receiver. We spent countless hours during the summers just throwing and passing, catching the ball, back and forth. We would run wind sprints together. Steve and I graduated high school as good friends. What happened? At some point, from fourth grade to my senior year in high school, I had to let that go. To Steve, that was nothing more than a fun prank or, you know, a good joke. But for me, gosh, the anger, the resentment, all that emotion that I kept for years of what I wanted to do to him to get him back, to finally have to let that go. As Christians, I believe it starts in our heart. We've got to open the door to our hearts to let Christ in, our souls, our very being, that emotional side of us. But man, the brain's where our memory is stored. Somebody did something wrong to us, something didn't go right in life, an incident in life, an arm being taken, all the challenges that come, it's right here. It's where we live. the transformation of our minds is as important as the transformation of our hearts. And those come together as our living sacrifice to God. Are you dead or are you alive? Let's pray. Gracious God, we give thanks that you have given to us your word, your promises, that if we will truly offer ourselves to you as a living sacrifice, that through that very act, that we are giving our best and entering into worship with you. God, continue to work through the lives of all of us, but especially those here in the Withville Baptist family of faith, that they continue to live out a living sacrifice in this community and their impact that they have on our world and building your kingdom here on earth. In your most holy name we pray. Amen. If you will come forward to this time of invitation, if there is a decision that you want to make, that's something on your heart that you want to share, Bill will be here, or other leaders here in the church will be here to welcome you and to pray with you. Or if you're not a part of God's family yet, this is a great opportunity to say, I'm ready, God. I know what you're trying to do in my life. I've seen it. Now's the time. So come during this time of invitation and decision.
Serve.